What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here?
Broadcasting live from the greatest city in the world.
Austin, Texas, baby.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
You guys want to play some twos?
You know what? Actually, we're kind of in the middle of a conversation.
P&E.
What's P&E?
Bucky Godbolt, Aaron Hogan on the Horn, 104.9 AM 1260 and hornfm.com with the Longhorns Play and Austin Talks Sports.
You think we've gotten too radical with our message? Well, I got news for you. You ain't heard nothing yet. And if you don't know, now you know. Glory, glory!
Oh, B&E rolling on. It is Big 12 Football Media Days Day 2, brought to you by Reliable Automotive. Keep it local, keep it reliable. Great people helping us get here and bring the sights and sounds of Big 12 Media Days 2 days to you. Yesterday, some good stuff. We'll hear from Lincoln Riley coming up on his quarterback situation. It's as unique as any we've seen in a while in college football. Also hear and talk about what we heard from Gary Patterson in TCU. Texas Tech, Iowa State, and Kansas, and looking forward to Tom Herman and the Longhorns' appearance today at Big 12 Football Media Days. It's Tom Herman's year two here. So same for Matt Rhule, the head coach at Baylor. He'll be here with three players. Also, Dana Holgorsen, one of the favorites in the Big 12 with West Virginia, Bill Snyder in K-State, and Mike Gundy. He's a man. He's pushing 50 now.
Yeah.
He'll be here with Oklahoma State. So all things will be kicking around this morning. Good conversations. And thank you to CB on Twitter who has sent us the poop emoji, which is so popular.
That's
and also,
so cute.
Also, one of your friends sent you his own guy emoji, which it's National Emoji Day.
Yeah, you dudes can quit sending me your emojis and your duck sausage emojis and all that stuff. I don't want them. I don't want them. I don't like them. I don't think another man should send a man picture of what he thinks he's – what he thinks of himself.
Those are called bitmojis, I've been told.
Bitmoji. And by the way, you guys don't look anything like what you send. You know what I mean?
It's funny. My wife looks exactly like hers.
Well, my wife looks sort of like that, except for the costume. The wonder.
Your wife likes to play dress-up?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've seen these little outfits that they're sending, but guys, you don't – because you don't look – you're not Brad Pitt, so quit sending the Brad Pitt emojis. It doesn't work for you.
All right, let's get some headlines. And a very special guest will join us here on our broadcast location on Radio Row in Frisco, Texas, the Ford Center. Let's get you the news of a Tuesday morning.
Horn Headlines brought to you by Top Gun Rentals and Lawn Equipment. Get a free steel or Husqvarna weed eater with every riding mower purchase through the end of July at Top Gun Equipment. TopGun.net. We'll shoot you straight.
That's right. Top Gun brings you the headlines. Won't take long. Not a lot out there. But there is baseball, where high drama at baseball's home run derby last night, part of the All-Star festivities in our nation's capital. It was Bryce Harper, the local favorite and hometown favorite and local and favorite to win the event, trailing Kyle Schwarber 18-10 in the final when Bryce Harper flipped a switch and blasted 9 home runs in the last 47 seconds to win it, 19-18. Pretty incredible stuff with the clock ticking down. Harper was incredible. 19-18, he wins the All-Star Game Home Run Derby. All-Star Game is tonight with the American League against the National League. A.J. Hinch, of course, the Astros manager managing the AL. He has chosen Chris Sale, the big lefty from the Red Sox, to start for the AL. It's a third straight year he will have done that. He'll face Max Scherzer for the second straight year from the National League and, of course, the Washington Nationals. Quick note from baseball, where All-Star shortstop Manny Machado will suit up tonight as a member of the Baltimore Orioles during the All-Star game, play shortstop. But according to baseball insider John Heyman in a report, Machado is very close to being traded away. Heyman names the Phillies, Brewers, and Dodgers as the leaders for Machado, who can be a free agent at the end of the year. The Yankees and Indians are lagging behind in those talks. Heyman's report indicates that Machado may not play another game with Baltimore when play resumes after the All-Star break. He is batting .315 with 24 home runs, 65 RBI. Would be a huge upgrade for whoever can grab him. One report from the NBA, Brian Windhorst of ESPN, reporting that the Toronto Raptors have emerged as the clear front runner to acquire the services of disgruntled Spurs star Kawhi Leonard, and that the Lakers and 76ers have somewhat bowed out and given up hope on acquiring Kawhi in a trade from San Antonio. And Le'Veon Bell, on the day NFL players could sign, the final day they could sign long-term contracts, having been franchised, Le'Veon Bell did not agree to a long-term deal with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Instead, he says he'll play one more year in Pittsburgh and then test the free agent market. And that's the news.
The testing of the free agent market, once again, for Le'Veon Bell is pretty risky. $70 million is a lot of money for a running back. And a guy who's already collected $14 one year, $14 the next
year. As a franchise player.
And you're a running back in the NFL. I'd go ahead and take that $70 million and call it a career after that's all said and done.
You know, I'm kind of cold-hearted in this and my mindset of it, but the way the Steelers have done this is exactly how you handle a running back in today's day
sure.
and age. You draft a guy in the second or third round. He's playing on a low-money contract, and then you franchise tag him as many times as you can, and then, you know, Le'Veon Bell will hit the market when he's 27, 28 years old.
And he can't be that mad at you. You're paying him $14 million.
No, he can be mad at you because you never – it's like the girlfriend that you've perpetually been engaged to, but you've never really married. You've never invested long-term players. I mean, mm-hmm. that's the long-term promise. Hey, I'm here. You're our part of us. Now, someone texted and mentioned that maybe Le'Veon Bell is thinking Big Ben doesn't have many more years, so maybe I don't want to sign long-term. But either way, interesting discussion. And, again, that discussion with Le'Veon Bell, he's the first of many. Wait till Ezekiel Elliott here in Dallas hits his
sure.
his time when they start having to franchise tag him. I think the exact same conversation will be being had. Todd Gurley with the Rams. I mean, when you see last year a team like New Orleans drafting Alvin Kamara and a team like Kansas City drafting Kareem Hunt in the second or third round, those guys were the offensive players of the year in their respective conferences from that position, and they're on low-money contracts. You can find quality running backs later in the draft. Heck, look this year in Washington with a guy like Darius Geis out of LSU. They got him in the second round. He might be their feature back for the next several years with the Redskins.
Goodbye again.
He's been untackleable in their mini camps.
Right.
And same thing. That's the recipe. And it's unfortunate for a running back because the position has been devalued that they're going to invest their long-term dollars into quarterbacks, left tackles, pass rushers, cornerbacks, and wide receivers. And that's just the nature of the beast right now in the National Football League. Bryce Harper was tremendous last night. That was thrilling, man. That was come-out-of-your-seat stuff as the clock was winding down. 9 home runs in 47 seconds. That was pretty awesome. And the All-Star game will be tonight. Alex Bregman acquitted himself pretty darn well last night, I thought, with 15 home runs. And he also ran out of time. He was trying to chase down Kyle Schwarber. And if Kyle Schwarber hadn't gotten 30 seconds of bonus time because he hit 2 long home runs, Bregman would have advanced. And, of course, Schwarber ended up in the final facing Bryce Harper, who eventually won it 19-18. All right, look who's here with us. He is from Horns 24/7. He's made the trip up. He is Jeff Howe, one of our favorite people to talk Longhorn football and college football in general with. Jeffrey, how are we doing?
Doing well. You're talking about running backs getting value in the draft. I was just thinking DeMarco Murray, a guy that played for the Cowboys' third-round pick.
Same thing, right?
Yeah.
And then when it's time to go, it's time to go.
Yeah.
And you let him go. You know, use them while you got them and then let them go sign their big money elsewhere. But you wonder if the rest of the league – that's why it's interesting for me with Le'Veon Bell. What is the market going to be for Le'Veon Bell next, March?
Well, he's got a value as a wide receiver, too. We talked about the fact that this guy catches as many passes as you do. Well, he's still going to get the ball handed to him.
Right.
And when you get handed, you get pounded. And as I said, for 2 years in a row, you make $14 million as a running back in the NFL for 2 straight years, and you got an opportunity – to make $70 million, you're not even going to finish that contract.
Right.
Here's
two things we know, Bucky. One, we know he's not coming back to Pittsburgh on a franchise tag next year.
It's done.
So, and then when you shift the conversation to Texas, you talk about versatility, the ability to catch the football. I think that's what's going to make the difference with this Texas running back battle, whoever the guy ends up being. If it's Keyonte Ingram, if it's Trey Watson, if it's Danny Young getting most of the carries, yeah, they want the running game right. But I think this is going to be an offense maybe where you see the pass set up the run. And I think the ability of these backs to catch the ball out of the backfield, I think that's one thing you'll probably hear Tom Herman talk about today. It's one thing I think you'll hear in camp is that's what they really want, a guy who can catch balls. Because you look, Tom Herman had Zeke Elliott at Ohio State, caught a lot of balls, and you look at the backs Tim Beck had when he was the OC at Nebraska, had guys like Amir Abdullah, Rex Burkhead, guys that caught a lot of balls. I think that's what the staff really wants.
The Texas transfer, he caught almost 100 balls for U of H.
Catalan, I think, 2 years. Yeah, I think the big year, I think it was 6. Herman's last year there, I think he caught 44.
Well, then that comes
balls.
Under the heading of the kid from Cal then, because he's used to catching the ball out of the backfield. And, fifth year senior, right. I mean, he's a guy that you can – say right or right, screen plays, swing screens, things like that. He's used to it because the two cats they have right now are not.
Those are not those guys. That's where Keyonte Ingram will be ahead of the curve, I think, because coming out of the offense he played in at Carthage, it's a pro-style offense. You've got to know nuance of the passing game. You've got to know blitz pickups. You've got to know protections. I think from that standpoint, it'll probably take him a game or two, Buckers, to maybe get his feet wet. But I think maybe by that Oklahoma game, by the midpoint of the season, I think you'll see Keyonte Ingram. If he's not the guy, you'll see him taking a large chunk of those snaps.
Yeah, and I'd really like to know where's the progress of the two guys who were here last year.
Yeah.
With Young and Carter, have those guys gotten any better? Because was it Carter that against Iowa State caught the ball down the middle of the field, yeah. made it really over the shoulder, made it look real, real easy. You know, a young guy like that, his hands start looking like feet when the ball comes right. down at him. He made that one real smooth. He looks like a guy that can do some of the things that you want out of the backfield, yeah. I would think.
I think Danny Young improved during the spring. You know, everything I heard internally was that I think they liked the progress he made. With Tonio Carter, all things equal, he might be the most talented back in the program, but I think it comes down to two things with him. Is he mature enough to handle the role and the ball security issues?
Well,
I mean, you know, if you can't hang on to the football, you're not going to be on the field.
No.
I mean, that's just simple. You can't if you can't hold on the ball, you can't play.
Well, and that's where Trey Watson comes in is real interesting because, you know, he kind of reminds you of Tenille Carter when he's a senior, right? He's been,
yeah.
been through it at Cal,
right.
been through the injury frustrations, and now he knows this is his last chance. And, you know, one of the things that got Trey Watson to Texas, you know, Texas Tech was recruiting him hard. Cliff Kingsbury, LSU was in on Trey Watson. One of the things that Trey Watson has said is, you know, Stan Drayton, the running backs coach, sat with him and watched film and said, "This is exactly how we're going to use you. This is a play we see at Cal that we're going to implement." And that Drayton kind of won that battle, saying, "You're going to be our feature back. We need someone like you to do these things."
And if you know nothing else about Trey Watson, understand this: Cliff Kingsbury wanted this guy bad, and Texas Tech doesn't have a pressing need at running back. That, you know, Trey King was a 600-yard guy for them last year. You know, DeLeon Ward missed last year with academics, but those are two guys combined 1,000 yards each the last 2 years. You know, it would have been nice to have that luxury, but I'll trust Cliff Kingsbury's evaluation on offensive personnel mm-hmm. over most head coaches in the league. And when that guy wants you, when that guy sees you as being an X factor on offense, that lets you. We don't know what Trey Watson's going to do coming off the injury, but if Cliff Kingsbury values you enough to go recruit you really hard, to me, that's the best endorsement he could have.
Keep in mind, Tom Herman news conference. You'll hear it live here on the Horn in the 10 o'clock hour. This Tom Herman will take the podium, and we'll carry it for you live right here on the Horn. So, of course, we will. He'll be up. And we haven't heard much from Tom this summer. It's been very quiet, which is good. There haven't been a lot of issues as far as transfers and, you know, no off-field issues, dust-ups of that nature, which is good. So we'll hear Tom on what he's heard from his work and from the off-season work that has been going on. I want to talk some more Longhorns with you, Jeff, coming up. But let's talk some thumbnail stuff for what we heard yesterday. And let's first hear from Lincoln Riley, because Lincoln Riley, I thought, you know, last year at this time he had just gotten the job. We're talking about 6 weeks he's on the gig, taking over for the legendary Bob Stoops. And, you know, he you kind of could sense that. You know, he was confident, but he was brand new to this whole thing. This year, you can tell this is his program.
Right.
He has a vision for where he wants to take Oklahoma. He talked about the lack of recruiting talent on the defensive side of the ball, and if they want to compete with the Clemsons and Georgia's and Alabama's big picture, they've got to recruit better on the defensive side. But obviously the quarterback situation was the elephant in the room yesterday, and it was Brian Baldinger from Fox Sports stood up and started a question when he said Kyler is, and the question was, will the offense change at all with Kyler at quarterback? It wasn't out of right field. You know, he said, will it change with Kyler at quarterback? And Lincoln Riley immediately stopped him and said, Kyler is not the quarterback yet. There is a good competition going on, and Kyler is going to have to fight like crazy to win this job. And then after his press conference, it was televised, there was a little media session, and I asked him about the quarterback battle. Let's hear what Lincoln Riley had to say about the quarterback battle between Austin Kendall, the youngster out of the state of North Carolina, and of course, Kyler Murray, who has the edge. Here is Lincoln Riley.
Both these guys are different than Baker, you know, and a lot of great leaders are. I mean, that's, I think, to be a great leader, you got to be yourself and be confident in who you are. And both these guys have led teams. You know, Austin was very successful in North Carolina. And then obviously everybody knows about Kyler's record in high school. So these guys know how to win. You know, these guys know how to compete, but at the same time, they can't try to be Baker. They can't try to. You can learn some things here and there, but again, if you're not yourself, then people see through that, and that's the worst way to lead, in my opinion.
He was then asked about how you deal with Kyler Murray's baseball career and the new contract and his plan to be with the A's after this season. Here was a pretty candid Lincoln Riley on the baseball side of things.
The baseball and the money and all that don't have jack to do with what we're doing here. You know, he's done playing baseball at Oklahoma, so I mean, you know, he's. He's, as far as an OU football player, he's no different than anybody else we have. And so that's, you know, it hasn't been an issue up to this point. And knowing Kyler and his family, I would be shocked if it becomes an issue for us. I mean, if it was going to be a distraction, why would he even have come back? You know, I mean, the kid wants to play football. If not, he would already be training, getting ready to play baseball.
And I think most observers would bet the mortgage, or at least part of it, that Kyler Murray will be the starting quarterback for Oklahoma. but, you know, Lincoln Riley kind of has to handle it this way, right? I mean, Austin Kendall and he had a good battle through spring. You can't then come to Big 12 Media Days and declare that Kyler's the quarterback when Kendall still feels like he's got a shot at it. You got to leave it open coming into the camp.
And Austin Kendall's the guy you've got, you know, you've got coming back next year. You know, you've only got Kyler Murray for this fall, so you've got to keep Austin Kendall engaged. Even if you know Kyler Murray's going to be the guy, which, like you said, we all know he's going to be the guy, just keep dangling that carrot out there for him. Let him know that, hey, you're still going to have a chance to compete. It's no different than what Tom Herman, I think, today is going to say today about the two young quarterbacks. About Casey Thompson and Cameron Rising. Like, we all know it's probably going to be Sam Ellinger starting. It's not going to be Casey Thompson or Cameron Rising. But just keep dangling that carrot out there, making sure those guys work hard, because chances are you're going to need one of those two guys, maybe both of them at some point next year to do
something. Well, it'll be interesting to me if Kyler Murray is hanging around campus or if he's kind of off campus. And because the day you walk in to football practice and you bring your stuff back into the dorms or back into your apartment for another year, when you've got $5 million in the bank for yourself the next year, and you go through those first couple workouts, and it's 100-and-some degrees, and you probably think, what in the hell am I doing here? I mean, shouldn't I be getting ready for what my profession really is? Because football is not going to be his profession.
No.
But the one thing that is true is he loves college football. He loves the game. He understands it's not his long-term future. Baseball is. And he told everybody that was going to draft him, look, I'm playing football this year. That is part of the deal. And I think the Lincoln Riley, your point is right that, you know, he's got to keep Austin Kendall engaged. He doesn't want Austin Kendall because he could be his quarterback after next season and for two more years after that. But if there's any sense of entitlement from Kyler Murray, he's got to weed that out. That can't – because there was – the thing about Baker Mayfield and the leadership question was huge, and Lincoln kept talking about the leadership they have to fill. You know, Baker Mayfield was a coach on the field. Baker Mayfield coached this team in practice. When things weren't going well, it was Baker Mayfield that would stop the practice and say, look, no. And Lincoln didn't have to – you know, that's huge when a team is player-coached. Well, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield was the most engaged player.
Right.
And that's one of the things that made him great.
Well, he had that chip on his shoulder forever. Every place he went, he had a chip on his shoulder.
But he was totally engaged with his team and his teammates.
Right.
Kyler better be there as well. This can't just be this is my one-year swan song.
Right.
He better be completely dedicated and engaged to that team.
And that's the challenge for Lincoln Riley. And you look last year inheriting a talented roster from Bob Stoops, and I think he's one of the best, maybe the best offensive mind in college football. But now the next step for him is, can you take what's really amounted to a dynasty in this league, and can you sustain it over another extended period of time, just like Bob Stoops did during his tenure? That's the challenge for Lincoln Riley. And look, there's a reason why dynasties don't last forever, whether it's Texas under Mack Brown, SC under Pete Carroll. At some point, something goes wrong, something's mismanaged that causes
Florida and Urban Meyer when he left.
Causes the thing to unravel. So can Lincoln Riley sustain it? And handling this Kyler Murray situation is a big part of that.
Jeff,
the whole locker room.
Jeff, tell us about this offensive line for the Longhorns. It's you know, there's some enigmas on this line. You know, Hudson and people like that. I've been waiting. I've been hearing about you. Hear about him forever. And you know, once he gets healthy, he's one of the best. But it doesn't matter to me if you're not healthy. I just look at that and say, okay, then are you going to get hurt in week two? The linebacker, is Gary Johnson healthy? Because that's going to be very important. You brought to us 2 weeks ago when you were on with me the fact that there is a linebacker that's going to miss half of a football game in game one. And I was thinking, whoa.
Yeah.
And how healthy would Gary be? That's going to be very important to see how Gary, because I think he's one of the top players in the Big 12 on defense.
To me, when you go back, look back at Manny Diaz's defenses and then that first defense Charlie Strong had, how critical Jordan Hicks was to those defenses.
Yes.
I think Gary Johnson's that pivotal of a piece to this Texas defense. And when you talk about, look, whether they want to roll out the lightning package again and roll with six defensive backs, a big part of the reason that package worked last year is because you had a physical thumper in the middle in Gary Johnson who could clean stuff up between the tackles, and he runs like a gazelle. So he was kind of the perfect fit at linebacker for that. You mentioned, you know, the Maryland game, and that's going to be, you know, a tipping point game. How healthy is Gary Johnson? Does the groin flare up during camp? Is he ready to go? And then, like you said, Buck, something nobody's really talking about, Anthony Wheeler's got to miss the first half of that game because of the targeting penalty he got late in the Texas Bowl win against Missouri.
I can't believe those carry over after a bowl game. That is so silly.
Yeah, I would like to see that change. I mean, suspend him for, make him sit out the spring game or something. I don't know, whatever you got to do, but you know, extending into the first half of the next season is silly. But I think Gary Johnson's health is maybe the critical. I mean, it's the linchpin of this defense being able to do what it did last year. But you talk about the offensive line, and I think there's two different ways you could look at it. One, what are you getting out of that starting five? And to me, we talk about Calvin Anderson. It starts for me with Patrick Vahey and Zach Shackelford playing like you would expect two veteran multi-year starters on the offensive line to play. Look, we've seen them both show things they do really well. They've both clearly got things they don't do very well. But at the end of the day, it's about those two guys hitting a standard of consistency that's going to allow this offensive line to improve.
And that's for the whole season. That's not for a game here or the game there.
Right. You can't have two good games and then be terrible the next week. You've got to start playing to a standard. And then the thing Texas has battled with the offensive line for a decade now is depth. And do you have, you know, 6, 7, 8 really starting quality bodies in the mix? And that's Denzel Okafor getting better. That's Patrick Hudson getting healthy. Do you get anything out of Sam Cosmi? What's Elijah Rodriguez's role? So all of those things, it's not just, hey, how's Calvin Anderson going to fit in? It's there's 6 or 7 things you can look at on this offensive line that is this, and this going to be better for this group to at least get to average. And you say, well, average offensive line play, if they're average, they're miles ahead of where they were.
Yeah, yes, no doubt. And I know last year Tom Herman was pretty candid when asked about his concerns about the year, and it was injuries on the offensive line. They just didn't have the depth. This year, at least, with the hiring of Herb Hand to coach up some of that technique and consistency that they hope they can find, there are more bodies there. There are more people you're talking about. Last year, you knew you had 5 or 6, maybe 7, and that was it. This year, yes, there's still question marks, but there are 10, 11, 12 guys you're talking about, including a freshman class that includes a guy like Junior Engelau out of Salt Lake City who kind of has that body already. All right, we'll talk more about that. Jeff Howe is here, Horns 24/7. Tom Herman and the Longhorns will be here, including Patrick Vahe, Chris Nelson, Andrew Beck, and Brecken Hager will be with him. It's part of Big 12 Football Media Day's Day 2. We'll pick up the conversations with Jeff, including some stuff we saw yesterday that can dovetail back into Tom Herman and today from Gary Patterson and TCU. It's being a live in Frisco, Texas, Ford Center. It's the Horn. It's Big 12 Media Days presented by Reliable Automotive.
B&E.
Live in Frisco, Texas, Big 12 Football Media Days coming up for the top of the hour. It'll be salacious gossip, including a model in Miami turning some heads. And a rumbling I heard here at Big 12 Media Days yesterday that would be a really dumb idea by the Big 12 if it is indeed going to be what they're going to do. Also, it's a Tuesday Blitz. Your chance to sound off, 447-3776. Tom Herman's news conference, 10:40 today, here from Big 12 Media Days. We'll carry it for you live here on the Horn during Trey and BK's hour, first hour. Tom Herman for about 20 minutes live here, the Q&A from Big 12 Media Days. Jeff Howe from Horns 24/7 continues to join us. Excited to have him here. Quick breaking news from the baseball front. I mentioned in the headlines that John Heyman reporting that Manny Machado maybe playing his last game in a Baltimore uniform tonight because he's about to be traded. The L.A. Dodgers, as you predicted, Buck, could be emerging as the team that acquires Manny Machado, and what a jolt that would be for the defending National League champions in their quest to get back. Manny Machado, according to John Heyman, could be on his way to the L.A. Dodgers. We'll keep you posted on that. That is just currently,
that's a heck of a lineup.
That's currently gossip.
That's a heck of a lineup, too.
Yeah, the kid Max Muncy was really good last night in the home run derby. He can slug it.
Where did that dude come from?
I know, right? The A's released that guy. And he's jacking home runs. I mean, it was fun to watch last night. Jeff Howe is here. All right, Jeff, so we talked about the Longhorns and their offensive line and the questions Tom Herman will be asked today. And you know, we haven't heard from Tom in a while. You know, I was interested yesterday that Gary Patterson was here, and we talked to him on the show. And he brought his sophomore quarterback, Sean Robinson, who is clearly the future of the program. He's a kid out of DeSoto, led DeSoto to a state title. He's a big 4- or 5-star commitment. But Gary said, look, he's our quarterback. I want him to be here around some seniors and see how this goes and experience what being a leader is like and how you handle yourself in big situations
like this.
The
first time Gary's ever done something like that.
Yeah, first time Gary did. Some here said, Jeff and Buck, that why isn't Tom Herman doing the same thing? Tom Herman has a sophomore quarterback in Sam Ehlinger, who most people believe is the quarterback for Texas. Why is he not here? What say you to those people who criticize Tom for not bringing his QB?
I think that you've got to look beyond bringing a guy to Big 12 Media Days. Is that a big deal, I guess, in the grand scheme of things? But Tom Herman clearly digs the intangibles Sam Ehlinger brings to the table, and I think if it were just based on that, I think he would have already named him the starter. But obviously it goes deeper than that. It's the thing with Sam Ehlinger is the mistakes he made last year, are those things you chalk up to him being a freshman, or are those things that are really big issues in terms of the turnovers and the decision-making that a guy needs to grow and learn from? I think, like we talked about with the Oklahoma situation, Tom Herman's got to keep this going, if nothing else, to keep Shane Buechele engaged to make sure, and he had to do it in the spring, to make sure he doesn't leave, because Shane Buechele could easily be somewhere else right now. So at least, if Sam Ehlinger is the guy, at least by keeping this competition going, you ensure yourself that you've got a veteran quarterback with game experience behind the guy starting. So, I mean, would it have been nice for Texas to bring a quarterback to Big 12 Media Days? Yeah, but I just knowing that Tom Herman loves all the intangible things Sam Ehlinger brings to the table, to me it's not that big of a deal.
I know you have to cover all the bases as a head coach. That's your job. That's why they pay you $5 million a year. But in year number two, by now Tom Herman should know that Shane Buechele's not going anywhere. He wants to get a degree from University of Texas. He's going to be a competitor. As I said, the guy's going into his junior year. He's an adult, grown guy. He's not the competition thing, because if you say that this is my starting quarterback, Shane Buechele's not going to pick up his stuff and go home. You know what I mean?
There are a lot of people thought that back in January that maybe that's the case. But yeah, the fact that he's here now.
Yeah. Right.
And again, my projection is he's going to graduate by next year, and he's going to graduate transfer for his senior season somewhere where he can pick and he wants to be. And to his dad's favor, he's
But I understand why Tom Herman has to –
No, I get
in
that.
His mind, he can worry about it, because you do have to cover all the bases.
Right.
But I think that's one base that he really shouldn't worry about. If he really feels good about Sam Ehlinger and could have brought him up here, Shane Buechele is not going to be back in Austin, Texas, trying to pack his stuff and trying to leave. That guy's a competitor. He understands the game of football. That guy's been around sports all of his life.
Right. I would rather have a coach worry about quarterback too much than not worry about it enough,
okay,
because Mac Brown was guilty of that. Charlie Strong was clearly guilty of that, not worrying about, oh, we'll be fine with either Jarrod Hurd or Tyrone Swoops at quarterback. Well, clearly you weren't, and that's why the program got in the position it was in.
And again, clearly at TCU, Sean Robinson is the future of the program the next several years. There are some people who believe, Sam Ehlinger, he's the guy this year, and if Shane Buechele does indeed, graduate transfer or something else, that Cameron Rising or Casey Thompson might be the future of Texas football at that position.
Could be.
If Sam Ehlinger continues to have turnover problems, injury issues like he battled in high school and then again last year, that maybe he's not the long-term future.
And I think maybe more so than you just said. I think more so than turnover issues. I think he's going to mature about that. But injury issues.
Right.
Is he going to duck his head down there and take a hit sometime and be dazed and confused out there? Or is he going to learn how to get out of bounds, learn how to slide? He doesn't have to be the toughest guy on the field.
I think
that's more on that part than the actual part about throws and will they make mistakes.
That, to me, Buck, is where Sam Ehlinger has to strike a balance between maintaining that physical edge that makes you who you are as a player and being a smarter runner.
You're valuable to the team.
Right. There's no shame. It doesn't make you a coward if you slide or if you get out of bounds or if you're not just trying to lower your shoulder.
It makes
your head
you smart.
Safety. Exactly.
It makes you very smart because you're the key cog to the wheel.
Right.
We need you back for the next play. And I think that is absolutely a fair statement with Sam Ehlinger, because he did battle injury problems as a senior at Westlake and obviously last year with the concussions. So no quarterback for Texas, but Pat Vahe will be here. Chris Nelson, what does that say to you that Chris Nelson's here? He's replacing Puna Ford, who was the most valuable player on the Texas defense. There was some chatter that maybe he was looking to go elsewhere because he was a Charlie Strong recruit out of the state of Florida, that maybe he'd want to go elsewhere with this new regime. He's back, and not just back, he's here representing the defense along with Brecken Hager.
I think that's the role they've got carved out for him, is to be at least the first guy in line to replace Puna Ford and be the guy that if you do decide that you want to roll out that three-down look that they were so successful with last year, that Nelson's going to be the guy that plays over the ball. I tend to think this defense will look a little bit different, because I think whereas last year it was all about Puna Ford, and not everybody got caught up on Puna's height, but we saw it. Look, when you're as strong as he is.
They had the highest stuff rate in college football.
Right. When you're as productive as he is playing over the ball, you can get a lot of stuff done behind you with your linebackers and blitzing as many guys from the secondary and blitzing from depth like Todd Orlando did. But I think this is going to be a defensive line. I think you'll see it be more like Orlando's defensive lines were at Houston, where you're relying more on movement and doing some different things. Taking advantage of the athleticism you got. I mean, when you look at Nelson, Brecken Hager, Charles Omenihu, even a guy like Taquan Graham, you got a lot of athleticism with guys that are 270, 280, 290 in that range. Buck, I think we're going to see a lot of twists, a lot of games up front that maybe we didn't see last year to try to get some guys loose.
It'll be and that's interesting you say that, because you didn't see a lot of that. You just saw Puna Ford control a bunch of guys on the offensive line.
Hold up the fort.
And everybody else.
Let Malik run to it.
But if you can get some twists and some nice stunts in there, some nice tech stunts and all that other stuff, that'll be great, especially for Brecken Hager and Minihue. Yeah. Those guys that can come off the corner real quick, change directions, and come inside on you, it'll be good. Patrick Vahe being here, I'm not going to say it's a bone. That's the throw. Because he's a senior, I think it's trying to tell him of the importance, how important he is to this offensive line. Right. You have to perform like a guy who should have been here for the last 2 years,
as a matter of fact.
Yeah. And this has to be practice. It has to be every down. I think it's just giving this kid an opportunity to really, really shine. To me, there's no other reason why Tom Herman brings him.
Right. And, you know, we were talking about the offensive line earlier, and the glimpses we got to see of spring practice, Herb Hand was on Patrick Vaihe and Zach Shackelford really hard, and I think part of that was kind of what I was saying, knowing how valuable those two guys are up front and the need for those guys to play like you would expect multiple mm-hmm. year starters at that position to play. I think that's a big part of it.
Jeff Howe is here, Horns 24/7. We'll think of that and dovetail back to the running back conversation. You know, because people talk about Sam Ehlinger. If he does stay healthy, one of the other issues is his accuracy. Tom Herman is one with quarterbacks who were not Baker Mayfield accurate.
I mean,
Braxton Miller was not the most accurate quarterback at Ohio State. It's one of the reasons he's not going to play in the NFL had to move to wide receiver. You know, Greg Ward was a receiver converted to quarterback. He wasn't the most accurate quarterback either. But in a Tom Herman system, the quarterback's legs and the ability to run the ball is the key in the power spread, which then forces safeties up, which opens up things on the outside. That running game is key. But you mentioned it earlier, Jeff, Pat Vaihe getting pushed by Herb Hand and Zach Shackelford. If you could argue, if you want to be an optimistic Longhorn fan and say Calvin Anderson can help secure left tackle, if Vaihe and Shackelford take a step forward under Herb Hand's coaching, then it's right guard and right tackle where you have seven or eight guys who can compete for that job. You could have a legitimate offensive line for the first time in a while if those two veteran players, Shackelford and Vaihe, take a step forward and play like veteran players.
And I'm sold on the kid to play tackle. Moving him inside with a little help in there.
First adder.
Because he got his face pounded last year.
Right.
So he's used to playing in games. He's used to competing. It's not nothing's going to bother him inside.
Right.
Now, it'd bother him outside because he's left on an island too often. But inside, with the help of guys, I love him being inside a guard.
One
of those pieces we didn't talk about, too, and Tom Herman, I'm sure, will address it today, is Mikey Grandy cleared from the concussion he suffered during spring ball. If he's in the mix and able to give you something, that's another body, a JUCO body that can come in mm-hmm. and provide depth. But you're talking about Herb Hand and the run game. Where I see him making the biggest difference is, and we saw this a little bit in the bowl game when Tom Herman was calling plays and we saw that opening script, I think getting some more diversity because, Buck, even if this offensive line is better, it's still not a group that's going to consistently fire off the ball and mash people in the mouth and create a surge.
Are they athletic enough to take them pull and do some things, though?
You're going to have to figure out if you can do things where you're creating angles, you're taking advantage mm-hmm. of leverage, you're doing some of those different things to be a little diverse in your run game, do a little misdirection, create some movement, and help those guys out where you're not just counting, hey, if you guys can't fire off the ball and hit people in the mouth, then, we're just kind of screwed. I think Herb Hand doing that, bringing some of those things from that Gus Malzahn run game is going to help a lot.
Well, and that's what Tom Herman was at Ohio State, right? There was a ton of misdirection, a ton of counters.
Oh, yeah.
With Zeke Elliott, and that's back to the running back. Because one of my themes I'm leaving Big 12 Media Days with is this is the year of the running back in the Big 12. It's not the year of the quarterback. Last year was that with Baker and Mason Rudolph and all these QBs up and down the road. The running backs here, and, you know, can Texas find one becomes a question. When we saw David Montgomery yesterday from Iowa State, that kid is phenomenal, the junior. Gary Patterson brought two running backs, including Darius James, the running back. I mean, the kids at
Oklahoma,
sure. Rodney Anderson and Trey Sermon. I mean, this is the year of the running back in the Big 12. Does Texas have one that can help rev up their running game?
And Bucky, we talk about, you know, I know you guys were talking earlier about, you know, the six defensive back looks kind of taking over this league. I think one way you combat that and kind of bring it back to what we're talking about at the top with Le'Veon Bell, if you've got a running back that you can put in the slot, you can put him out wide, you can do some different things with, that is a difference maker, that's your equalizer on offense. The interesting thing about the six defensive back stuff is that's the first counterpunch we've seen from defensive coordinators in this league in a long time that actually worked.
You can't let it happen to you.
That actually had some success.
And as an offensive coach, you can't let that happen. You got to slap them down with the run game.
And I think when you've got a guy like David Montgomery that can do some different things like that, you know, Justice Hill from Oklahoma State's a guy that we'll see.
Yeah, forgot about him. He's tremendous.
That's a guy like that. So a guy who's not here, but a kid that I really liked a lot in the limited time we saw him, Treston Ebner at Baylor, I think is a kid that they can do some things like that. Can Texas have that guy that you can have on the field all three downs that can be a difference maker that you can move around and put him in matchups?
You guys
situations?
Know what Texas has done with that package on defense. They have guys now that know how to take proper angles on tackling. If you have six defensive backs and you got two of them that don't take the proper angle and miss, the Longhorns have recruited kids that know how angles with Caden Stern and Foster, and the guys they have back there, even the guys you look at and you say, well, John Bonney, you look at a couple of those guys, are they really the guy? those guys have come such a long way in the angles that they take in tackling. You have to have really solid secondary guys. If you're going to put six of them in the backfield.
And, Bucky, we can talk about scheme all we want. Last year, the thing you take away from the Texas defense, if nothing else, the best tackling Texas defense I've seen in a long time.
Yes.
Technique and physicality was – and then the schemes on top of it. But without that, doesn't work. All right, we'll come back. Jeff, thanks so much. Good to see you, my friend.
Anytime, Jeff.
We'll roll on and hit your salacious gossip and your blitz. Jeff will be hanging out. More guests coming. Scheduled to talk to Brady Quinn at some point this morning, whether it's us or Trey and BK. Tom Herman press conference at 10:40. Our live coverage of Big 12 Football Media Days presented by Reliable Automotive. Keep it local, keep it reliable here on 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We stream it on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
It's Bucky and Aaron.
All right, quick programming change. We'll do Salacious Gossip and the Blitz in 1 hour on our way out. Yeah, we'll do it in an hour.
The Blitz on the way out to the old days.
We are thrilled to be joined at our broadcast location by a good-looking, snazzy dresser. In
Pennsylvania guy, don't forget that.
And a Pennsylvania guy. He's got his green jacket on. He is Baylor head football coach Matt Rhule, his second Big 12 Football Media Days. Excited to have him sit with us. Coach, how are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you very much.
Thank you for spending some time with us this morning, Coach.
How's the summer been?
Tell you what, it's been great. We've worked hard. The players have worked hard, and I got away for a little bit. Just flew back in yesterday, so went and hung out with the family. You know, so the right mix. But now it's time to get ready for some football. So it's exciting to be here and just sort of kick off, really, the season.
The transition. You mean, last year was year one. Looking to year two, how has the transition gone for you, your family, and your staff?
Well, I think. The people of Waco couldn't have been any kinder. I mean, they've done a great job of embracing us, our families, the coaching staff. I mean, it's really been a nice time in our lives, and because it is a great place, a great university, and people have accepted us. And you know, I think the team. You know, we've had to sort of grow together, and you know, we went through a hard year last year, and if anything, I think that's brought us together. Where I'm hopeful that we're in a pretty good place right now as a program.
Now, Matt, you've been a hardcore. I mean, you've been a linebacker. I mean, you've been a hardcore coach. This team, physically, the types of recruiting that you've done last year, and those type of players in a conference that people call a finesse conference. But you've always been a physical coach. You want physicality on your football team. Are you starting to get that? Did you get that? Did you feel like you got a little bit of that in the spring with the kids?
Yeah, I felt like the spring was a major step forward. And, you know, you look at our team, I think there's like 50 new guys, you know, in the last year, like less than 2 years. And so you have a bunch of young kids. Mm-hmm. But they've bought into what we did in our seniors, the guys that are here. They've bought into it from the weight room to the practice field. And, you know, I think TCU last year and Iowa State proved that you can play defense in the Big 12. And so that's what we're, you know, that's where our eyes are set on, being a team that can play defense, that can run the ball when needed to. You know we have great athletes. We know we should be explosive, but we need to have that physical component that I think lets you win the big games when you need it.
You came from a winning program at Temple that you had built into a team that was winning double-digit games, and last year you lose double-digit games. How challenging is that for you personally to you know, where you were to now what you're dealing with?
Well, I think because it happened so early, it sort of reset everyone. You know, I mean, you know, I certainly didn't expect to go out and lose to Liberty. And while I hated it and while it was miserable, if you don't take advantage of it, then you're a fool. And so I said, hey, this is where we are. You know, the only thing we can do is work. You know, we can't tweet about it. We can't Instagram about it. We can't talk about it. We've got to come back and we've got to work, and we have to really start from ground zero. And so, to me, it's not a fun time, but that is a fun phase when you're building a football team from the ground up. And I'm hopeful that, you know, everyone will see some of the fruits of that labor that, really not me, but our players put in all last season.
You know, you have a bunch of guys that are going to be here with you today. I got an opportunity to do Lake Travis High School football games over the last couple of years and see Charlie Brewer as he matured as a high school player. His maturity last year, taking his hits, and boy, did he take some hits at times. But that guy bounces back. He can be a wide receiver, running back. He does all those types of things. How happy are you with him and also the other quarterbacks coming into the season?
Well, I think the thing is, as we were going through that season, one of the things I remember saying, look, turning to my dad, who's with me all the time, and saying to him, I said, well, at least we know we have a quarterback. And we know, you know, when I was at Temple, I had the same quarterback for 4 years. You know, he was a 4-year starter off to the NFL. I got pretty used to sometimes he'd yell at me from the field instead of me yelling at him. I mean, I got pretty used to that. And so Charlie has that same feel. He has it. Whatever it is, you know, you can't put it on the rankings. You can't time it, but it's there. And right behind him is Gary Bohannon. who we recruited this year, came in this spring, who I just think at some point when he's ready is going to take the Big 12 and show. I mean, he's a special player. So I think we have a good, healthy quarterback room. We don't have a ton of scholarship quarterbacks. We only have three. You're supposed to have five, and we have three. But I like the ones that we do have.
Matt Rhule is with us, second-year head coach at Baylor. He'll be here along with four of his players, coming off a 1-11 year, but nine starters back on offense, including Charlie Brewer, eight on defense. What do you think are your strengths coming into year two for you guys in this season?
You know, it's funny. A position of weakness for us last year was our defensive backfield, and I feel like watching them develop, watching them grow, it should be a position of strength for us. And you certainly have to be, you know, excellent at corner and safety in this league, or else you're going to get exposed. And we had a lot of guys, you know, sort of trial by fire last year. But I've seen them, if any position has taken a jump, they have. And then, you know, I'm excited about our receiving core. I think it's as fine as any receiving core in the country. Chris Platt, who's here with me today, you know, came back from injury. Only played three games last year and still led the country in 70-yard plays. Denzel Mims was all Big 12. Jalen Hurd, you know, transferred in from Tennessee, and he's making the move to receiver. And a host of other young men, Gavin Holmes, R.J. Sneed. So we've got a pretty good, you know, a receiving room. And for a guy that doesn't love to throw the football, for a guy that's always been known as a run guy, I've bought into it. I'm 100% in, and we're throwing, and I'm like, I'm not the smartest guy, but I'm smart enough to know to throw the ball to those guys. And so it's a fun group to be around.
Hey, you as a former linebacker, you like running up tackling those running backs. It's harder chasing those receivers.
There's no question. No question.
Especially when they're as big as your guys. You got Jalen Hurd's, 6'4 and 230. These are big guys.
Yeah, I mean, Jalen's a guy that, you know, he took the SEC by storm. I mean, he was about 400 yards away from being Tennessee's all-time leading rusher, and he's playing receiver for us. He's reinvented himself. He sat out last year, and that was one of those guys, as you know, you went through the year, you're looking over there, you're seeing him, and you're saying, hey, you know, there's some reinforcements coming, and we'll be a much better team moving forward. But I think he gives us that tailback mentality, you know, that run after the catch, and such a big man out on the perimeter.
Yeah.
Matt, what have you had to do over the last couple of years, you know, Baylor and on the field, off the field, things that have happened with this football program? What have you had to do as the guy who's in charge to not only protect what goes on at the university, but your football team in general, your players? You know, there people will say, well, why is Baylor still in the Big 12? What is it that you have done and implemented that is going to be the standard bearer for what you're about and what the foundation of your football program?
Well, I'll tell you this, and I'll say this straight up. There's not a program doing more in the country than what's happening at Baylor. I mean, you know, I think people have to, you know, what happened at Baylor, I wasn't there, so I can't say all the details of it. But I know that we are transparent. When something happens, we have a process that's fair to the process, and also fair to our student athletes. We don't overreact. I don't overreact. I don't underreact. We try to be as thorough and as detailed and as fair as possible. We train our student athletes. We're mentoring them. We're talking to them. I would send my son there 100 times in 100. And what's happening now is you see a lot of other schools, these issues, these scandals are starting to pop up. And so I think everyone has to step back and instead of pointing fingers and just, you know, say, you know what, this is a societal issue that hit Baylor, but it hit Michigan State. And it's hit some other schools. It's hit some schools close to home recently.
Yes, it has.
And I think we all better sit back and say, you know what, why don't we not use this as a recruiting tool? Why don't we not sit there? Why don't we all sit there and say, hey, how do we fix this? Because there's all kinds of people being affected. There's young people whose lives are being affected. But from a guy whose boots are on the ground, there's no program in the country. Now, they might be doing as much, so I'm not saying we're better than anybody else, but no one's doing more from character development to all the way through to helping you find a job than us. And we're not doing it because of what happened. We're doing it because it's right, and we're doing.
But that's your. That's what you. That's that, you.
We did. We tried to do the same thing at Temple. We're just in the microscope right now. But that's why I came. You know, at the end of the day, I'd love to win a lot of football games. But you know, I hope that someday when I leave Baylor, I can say, hey, you know what? We did something right. We did something good because it's too good of a place to have that, you know, hanging over.
I think some of your players have just shown up. You're going to have the best dressed group here. I don't think there's any doubt about that. You'll have the best dressed.
Heck? Rule number one is never outdress the head coach.
They all did. They all did.
GQ magazine
here.
These
guys?
Looking good, guys. Looking good. Coach, last thing, the recruiting trail you mentioned. I mean, you brought in several Texas high school coaches to be on your staff. How's that gone? You come in from outside and the state. How's that gone as you build relationships with the Texas high school coaches?
I'll tell you what. I think the Texas high school coaches, I think number one, hiring David Wetzel and Sean Bell and Joey McGuire, was, you know, let guys know that, hey, we really do take this seriously in the relationship. And that's one of the reasons why we came to Texas, was to recruit Texas. You know, I'm the son of a coach, and I think that resonated. But I think it's, you know, been our clear and consistent message and being in and out there. I think a lot of coaches in Texas saw the way we handled, you know, adversity. It's one thing to handle success, but I think our coaching staff handled the adversity of last season with class. And I think a lot of guys would reach out to me and say, I appreciate the way you guys are doing that. And no one has signed more Texas kids in the last 2 years, you know, than us. I mean, not any other state, not any other school in the Big 12. We signed the most, and I didn't come here to go out and recruit outside the state. I came here because I'm in the state of Texas, and I, you know, we'll go for a kid here and there, but we're here to recruit within 3 hours of our homes. And so, it's year two, but I think that we've been accepted. I think people like the way that we're doing things. We're an open book. You know, we let people come in and watch, and you know, the Texas high school football coaches, they love football and they love their kids, and I think that tells them that this is a good place for their kids.
Coach, appreciate you jumping in with us here. Great stuff. Enjoy today, and then we'll be following you this season. We'll see you in Austin later
in the
year.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
Matt Rhule, head coach of the Baylor Bears, year two, and he does. He's got some great looking players over there. He looks good. He's a sharp-dressed man, but his players are dialing it up. So we'll come back. We'll hit Salacious Gossip in your Blitz next hour to wrap up our 9 o'clock hour. More guests coming. We got a lot to do. We're live at Big 12 Football Media Days presented by Reliable Automotive.